As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to the Andy Staples Show. You've been getting bombarded by opinions, by me and Ari Wasserman ranking coaching jobs. And I know some people have had fun with that. Some people got mad at that. It's been good. I like it when Ari says that Kentucky's a better job than Auburn and Texas A&M and you guys explode. Rightfully so. I got you. But I wanted to drill into some actual data for once, because that is, you know, listen, analytics are big in the sport of football. And just understanding why teams do what they do and where they're at, I think helps us have a better understanding of the sport. And that's why I've brought on Max Olson, national college football writer for The Athletic, who he is the king of stop rate. Stop rate is one of Max's favorite statistics. It's basically when the defense gets the offense off the field without letting them score. And it's a really telling stat for, you know, who plays good defense, and also how much defense matters now. It's interesting when we talk about this. If we talked about it 10 years ago, it would be a completely different conversation. But Max, you put out your stop rate rankings for the 2020 season, and you had to tweak it because you go week by week normally, but this season didn't really lend itself to that.
I mean, when would we have started during the season to just to say, hey, I know. These teams played two games. Now that means something. So, hey, I appreciate you throwing your support behind stop rate, Andy. I've always liked to joke that it's like the Tobias Funke thing about never knew. It's like, there are dozens of us, dozens.
That's right.
That's how many fans there are.
We're actually wearing jean shorts underneath here.
That's right.
You can't see them. But
so to the like 20 to 30 listeners you have who like stop rate, I appreciate your support over the years here, folks. We've been doing this for 4 years and used to do it by hand week to week, which was not a good use of my Sundays. It's, you know, we did it this year. It was a little belated in putting it out this way. I should put it a month or two ago, but had a baby that kind of, he came a week early, that kind of threw off the plans a little bit. We wanted to still put it out, even though you look through the standings and it was a weird season. The big thing being the weird schedules that everybody played, I think just makes for very different results in terms of who played consistently efficient defense. For those who don't know, stop rate is just basically, as you said, very simply, you know, what percent of drives did a defense get off the field without giving up points? And, you know, we all love to compare defenses in terms of points per game, but certainly the way the game has changed, it's almost better to look at points per drive and just bottom line, are you getting off the field?
Yeah, and by the way, if you're still viewing total defense as a statistic that matters,
right,
please go back to 2005 and live there, because that's not how football works anymore. If you are throwing total defense at me as a stat and you're trying to make a point, you've already failed, because it does not matter. It doesn't adjust for tempo. You got to know who they played. You got to know how they play on offense. It doesn't matter. This one tells them some stuff.
And in this one, actually, the teams at the top, too, tend to kind of line up with the teams that do pretty well in terms of yards per play, which, certainly we care more about.
Yeah. But you don't have to be at the top of this to win the national title. And that's where I wanted to start. Because we could start, Iowa and Wisconsin and Marshall and Army, the ones at the very top of the list. But I want to go down to number 25. And that is the University of Alabama. And I have a feeling, Max, if you'd have shown this to Nick Saban in 2011, he would have vomited all over the screen.
Absolutely. I think there's probably times during the 2020 season when Nick Saban kind of had to swallow that vomit during games and just deal with it because their offense was good enough. But certainly when you walk off the field against Florida and Ole Miss, and certainly because of the schedule they played, those games sort of weigh into the final result here in terms of how many stops they got. But, I don't know that Nick Saban would tell you this was one of the two or three or four best defenses he had on a national title team. Right, Andy?
No, but I think he did say that this was his best team, which I find interesting. And I think he's just sort of come around and he came around before most people did on how you win. Mm-hmm. And, that the wheels started moving on those changes before we actually saw them. I remember in 2012, they do the guest host thing on his radio show the Thursday before a game. Well, I had the one before the Texas A&M game where Johnny Football came in and beat them. And Nick Saban basically line for line predicted exactly what was going to happen in that game 2 days before it happened.
Right.
And I think he knew they were going to lose or it was going to be close. And he knew that Manziel was going to give them all kinds of problems. And if you look at his recruiting, he was already setting up the change. He was going to change personnel wise on defense. And I think it took another year or so before he said, offensively, okay, we're going to do this too. But it definitely shows you what the change is. And interestingly enough, looking at this, I kind of wish we'd gotten to see this Alabama team against Ohio State from last year rather than Ohio State from this year, because this year's Ohio State team got off the field 68% of drives. That was only good for 38th in the country. And they were number one.
And the
one
title
last
game
year,
drops
right?
that down quite a bit. But the defense last year with Chase Young and Jeff Okuda and just all the monsters they had, that group was number one in stop rate last year. And certainly that's not surprising. But I mean, I'm sure we've talked about this before, Andy, but I remember a couple of years ago talking with an SEC DC who we were talking about a different league, but he brought up I think what Nick figured out is you just go get those wide receivers. It makes life a lot easier, and you mentioned the A&M game. It doesn't mean that Nick Saban went into the office on Monday and said, I need Kevin Sumlin's offense or an air raid offense. He understood, let's go get the personnel, but still kind of stay true to, when you have the Najee Harris's, you can stay true to the things that you want to do in terms of the balance and really pounding people.
Well, and I think the initial step to that was I need more CJ Mosley's than we have now. I think that was the first step. And it was, okay, let's recruit more guys who can cover, who can play corner, and fewer traditional safeties. And if we're going to recruit a traditional safety, is he bigger? Can we make him a linebacker? I think that's how that started. And then there was the offensive change, especially when they made Lane Kiffin the offensive coordinator. But the other one I will say that I thought really jumped out at me on this list is Oklahoma, Max. They mm-hmm. finished number 27, so two spots behind Alabama, five spots behind Georgia. This is a defense that we were laughing at a couple of years ago.
Oh, 100%. I think in stop rate in past years when they, dumped Mike Stoops during the season and these years when they're playing for the playoff, I think they finished in the 90s, 100s nationally out of 130 in stop rate because – Oklahoma was very, very good at one side of the ball, better than anybody, but they just couldn't get off the field. And so Alex Grinch, it's a real credit to him in what he's done in 2 years there in coming over from Ohio State. Obviously, a Mike Leach guy, too, from Washington State. He came in preaching turnovers, and while they've done that at times, especially in big games, they've done that well. I think you've just also seen they've just recruited better players on defense and developed. And, you know, it's not, I think when Lincoln Riley took over the program, he even admitted, hey, the defensive recruiting and depth is not where it needs to be. And they've done a really nice job as a national recruiter of fixing that here over the last couple of years.
Well, and I think you look at the situation with Bookie Radley Hiles, who was a five-star guy who started as a true freshman. He's in the portal right now. They'd probably take him back, but he might not be a starter there next year. And that kind of speaks to how well they've recruited these last couple of years and how much they've upgraded talent-wise.
And you know, too, that it also starts with the fact that, you know, last year you get at the end of the season when they're really hot, you got Ronnie Perkins, who's a phenomenal pass rusher, but then Perrion Winfrey, the junior college transfer, and the emergence of Isaiah Thomas up front. Like when you start to get those guys, especially in the Big 12, it's going to make a huge difference. And certainly this was a year where if you're playing teams that don't have that offensive line depth or have guys out, you can really smash them.
Well, and that's the thing. I keep saying Oklahoma is a Gerald McCoy type away from really competing for the national title. I mean, that's the thing. They've been in the playoff. They're not that far.
Right.
They just need...
They're on the doorstep.
That person, you plug that into that defense, and suddenly that's a team you can't really do much with. And that's what Alabama has been. That's what LSU was in 2019. That's what Ohio State has been. And that's what Clemson has been. I mean, look at that last Clemson national title team. I mean, Christian Wilkins is one of the most dynamic defensive linemen you will ever see. And oh, by the way, he's playing alongside Dexter Lawrence and Austin Bryant and Cleland Furl. And I mean, that's insane. So that's the thing that you've got to take into account. Good defense still matters. I know we're kind of saying that it doesn't here because the defending national champs can be number 25 in this incredibly important statistic and still win. But it also, if you don't
I think that's a great example,
the greatest talent on offense, you can deal with it.
Right. Well, I think that's a great example. The problem with Oklahoma is you take some of these years with Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray, for example. And I know I've asked Bill Connolly this before on Twitter, but like you look at some of those teams and the offensive efficiency, if they were just a top 30 defense or a top 40 defense, I think they would have finished number one in SP plus, right? Like that's all it would have taken to be kind of the most complete team possible in terms of how elite they were offensively. So just being in the 25-30 range might honestly be good enough for Oklahoma.
Well, and that's the thing, because you look at, so Spencer Rattler is in his second year as a starter. All those other guys, even though they were transfers, had extensive experience before, right, where Kyler Murray didn't have extensive experience, but he'd been backing up Baker Mayfield for a year and he'd been in the program for 2 years. So they were much older, more mature. And so you expect them to come in and just light the world on fire. Rattler, it feels to me like it took him getting yanked in the Texas game before the light flicked on. And now it's on. And oh, by the way, they've got this really good defense. And oh, by the way, they've got some really good young receivers. I mean, that's a team that I'm not looking at them like if they have a defense anymore. I'm looking at them like they can compete for the title.
Correct. And that's why I think you see people are pretty comfortable putting them, you know, number two, number three in their really early preseason stuff. And not to put it all on one kid, but you go back to last year, K-State and Iowa State, they weren't horrific defensive collapses. Obviously, Oklahoma gave up a big rally in the second half to K-State, but it was freshman quarterback doing freshman things that generally closed the door on those games. And so, I think that was – now, Texas was an absolutely insane shootout, and they don't want to really play those kind of games anymore necessarily. Not that they can't win them, but I think you saw even when Oklahoma was weak last year early in the season – it was kind of more about the offense and not having the running back. You get Stevenson back, that solved things. It was kind of some more of those offensive issues that tripped them up more than the defense, which in some ways is kind of encouraging because you always trust from year to year that Lincoln Riley and his QBs are going to bring it.
We'll be right back after these words.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The other Big 12 team that jumped out at me was Iowa State here, and Iowa State ranked 19th in stop rate, 72.7% getting the other offense off the field without scoring. And this is the defense that has been most stolen in the last few years, and not just within the Big 12, but throughout the country. Everybody wants to try to run what Iowa State's running. What is it that they do that helps against these modern offenses?
Well, I think that what helped a ton last year was just that, you know, when you first made that switch to the odd front defense under John Haycock in the middle of a season and surprise everybody and do all this great stuff. First of all, you've got it with that very specific personnel, like Ray Lehman knows, where if you didn't have that guy, it wouldn't work quite as well. But then you had kind of that element of surprise. You've had to graduate those players, and you've had everybody trying to catch up to your defense and copy it here over the last couple of years and really study it in the offseason. I've heard from a ton of coaches who watch that and try and figure out ways to attack it when you drop eight on them and stuff like that. So they've had to kind of make the adjustment to the adjustment here, especially last season. It was a very veteran defense for them, and they're pretty much returning all those guys in 2021, which is, I think, very exciting for that team. They're really going to have a chance to run it back with few exceptions. And I think it was the veteranness of that group. You had Jaquan Bailey back, which I think made a big difference. Mm-hmm. You have these dudes at every level. Greg Eisworth is one of their best leaders. Mike Rose was one of the best linebackers in the country. And so those guys, they don't have the element of surprise anymore, but they now just have a ton of reps of doing this really well, and it still confuses Big 12 offenses, even when they spend a lot of time catching up and studying it now.
Well, and the other one that's wild in the Big 12 was West Virginia wound up being number 16 in the country. And this is a program that basically ran off its defensive coordinator over the summer and then had...
Nobody had the DC situation title, with, really.
Jordan Leslie and Jamal Adai were the I think they called them co-leads because nobody wanted to pay anybody as a DC. Right. And Leslie called the fronts and Adai called the coverages, and it worked. Now Adai has moved on to Georgia, where I think he's probably going to be in line to be an SEC defensive coordinator sooner rather than later. Because Dan Lanning's done a good job at Georgia. He's going to be a head coach sooner rather than later. So that's a place where you kind of want to get in line there. But Leslie's been moved up to DC at West Virginia. I mean, that's a program that I feel like they've overachieved since the moment Neil Brown got there. And I wonder if they get everything going offensively, can they be a surprise team in the Big 12?
Yeah, I think so. I remember going to visit him in his first spring at West Virginia, and the message was, we're going to be good. I just don't know when. And that was a time when they were really resetting the whole roster there in terms of all the Holgorsen players from that team that almost won the Big 12. All those guys moved on, and you're really starting fresh. And then you throw a global pandemic into the year two process when you're supposed to kind of take that big step. And I wrote about it last season, but they handled all that better than, as well or better than anybody. And it showed in their player availability and all that. And they got a lot better in 2020, when I'm sure a lot of programs could make a lot of excuses about what they dealt with. And hey, we had all these setbacks and we're not really where we want to be because of that. West Virginia had the number 16 defense and the most improved Power 5 defense in stop rate. And that's also a testament to the way things are today, Andy, where the best player they had on D last year was Tony Fields from Arizona, who they added in August.
Yeah.
Like, you have to save spots and you have to be on the lookout, because you never know when guys who could be true difference makers for your program go out on the market there. And so it's a credit to them for they had the relationship there to get him to come there at the start of fall camp. They've developed some really good players. Obviously, everyone knows the Stills brothers, but part of it is just them, you know, being ahead of the game here and getting some really, really valuable pieces to fill it out.
Now, Iowa and Wisconsin were at the top of this thing. And Iowa, the first two games they lost, it was a little out of character. And then they went on a run. Unfortunately, we didn't get to see them finish the season. They had a game against Michigan that got scrapped, and then they had a bowl game that got scrapped because of COVID. But I feel like they're just sort of they're playing to their identity. Those Phil Parker defenses are always very good, but that also matches what they want to be offensively. And you know, defense gets a little bit of rest. They're not dealing with the number of snaps. And Wisconsin at number two, same deal. But the Wisconsin thing's interesting to me because this was a good defense that Jim Leonard put on the field. That was not a very good Wisconsin offense by their standards. What if
for sure
next year it is, and you get a similar defense?
Well, I mean, it's a great point, and there's a reason why the Green Bay Packers called Jim Leonard and said, "Hey, you want to come on over here and run this defense?" I mean, it's the guy is really has kind of quickly established himself as, I think, one of the best DCs in the country. And certainly that was a tall task when he stepped up there. I think you're right. I think it's really impressive the way that they, were able to fill it out. And certainly from the start, and there's so many teams like this, Andy, where you start the season, you see Graham Mertz right away and you're like, okay, all right. No Jonathan Taylor. Fine. This is what they are now. And they're exceptional. And then of course it was just a really bumpy road the rest of the way in terms of being able to play the games. But you're right. Yeah. I think they set up even with what they dealt with. I think the performance there shows you that there's some real upside here going forward, especially if they can just have a more normal team.
Yeah. If they can get and they get a lot of that back. Mm-hmm. And that's just a normal year for them. I feel like would be the best thing. Cause that was of all the teams that, you know, had their stops and everything. It feels to me like that their stop just sort of crushed any momentum they might have had. Now, it might have just been the first game was an anomaly. It was a little bit fluky, but it just felt like they were off track after that.
I'm with you. You know, one of the things that's weird about going through these standings this year too, you knew there'd be some surprises just based on how the season went. And part of it, I wonder, as you look through this, Andy, are there some where you just say, you know what, I'm just going to give them the mulligan. I'm going to say that this was 2020. Because the one that stood out to me, the defense that declined the most in stop rate was actually Michigan, dropping all the way to 105. Now, they made a DC change. I would probably bet that I think Don Brown still knows how to coach defense and probably will do just fine at Arizona when they can get some players there. But some of these, you do wonder, like, Is the drop up? Do you just write that off to 2020, or is that more of a sign of issues ahead?
I can tell you one I'm really writing off is LSU.
Yeah,
bad coordinator hire, didn't work.
Yeah, you know,
they dropped disastrous to 72, and they were especially the first couple of games. I mean, the Mississippi State game, the Missouri game, they were just awful. They got better as the season went on. Now the Ole Miss game is a shootout, but Ole Miss is going to get everybody into a shootout. That's not. Not
and
really
Ole Miss
surprising.
Finished 122 in stop rate because that was not really the goal of 2020 to lead the country
right.
in defense. You know,
there's a little bit of YOLO with Ole Miss. And now I will say, Ole Miss is one of those we talked about Oklahoma a few years ago. If Ole Miss can get to adequate on defense, Ole Miss can be a lot of fun. Ole Miss can
Absolutely.
Be a scary team to play in the West. But the LSU thing, they got a bunch of good players. You know, I think you saw that. You saw that against Florida. Where the you know I think didn't Ricks went out early in the game or no Ricks had to pick six in that game, but you know they had gotten to the point where they'd lost a bunch of guys. They were sort of this is who they had, and it felt like okay, this is a team that's turning the corner. And now you know they did pitch around quite a bit for a defensive coordinator, and but they got somebody who had worked with Dave Aranda before, who I think maybe the understanding and the coaching style more than anything, maybe the thing that helps, because you know, with Bo Pelini, there's never been a problem he couldn't yell at. I'm not sure that's necessarily the best style with a bunch of guys who got recruited to play for Dave Aranda.
Yeah, that transition never really made a ton of sense in terms of just the vibe of how you run that defense. Dave Aranda being just the polar opposite of Bo Pelini in terms of personality and just how zen he is. And you saw it from game one against Mississippi State that were just, you know, the TV shots of people getting yelled on the bench. They were just going to have a long, long season of that. But I think you also knew going in that the difference was when you watched 2019 LSU, oh, wow, there's a lot of NFL dudes at nearly every position on defense. Last year, wow, there's a lot of kids on the field. That's just what they dealt with.
And it's going to be the same. I mean, the Rick Stingley tandem is probably the best cornerback tandem in the country. Durante Jones is the new defensive coordinator. He'll come in with a style that I think that will be a little more conducive to, you know, what these guys were recruited to play in and what they want. So,
and hopefully they figure out how to adjust from game to game, from quarter to quarter, you know?
Well, and I'm telling you, the West is going to be scary. And we always talk about the SEC West being good, but this is legit scary because Alabama's Alabama. We'll see what happens with Auburn under Brian Harsin. But LSU is going to have a bunch of NFL talent that has some experience now that maybe has a better coaching match on both sides of the ball. Mm-hmm. You got Texas A&M, who I thought last year was a really kind of telling year for Texas A&M because we kept saying, oh, year three of Jimbo, it's going to get better. But a lot of that was based on the schedule getting easier. And then the way the schedule turned out, it was probably just as hard.
Right.
But they were much better.
Yeah, sure. They didn't get to play Colorado in a bunch of much easier non-conference slate. But we also still saw their best football. You know, I think, and you can sort of nitpick that the things that you saw from them week to week offensively and stuff like that. But I mean, yeah, they finished 35th in the stop rate here. I think Mike Elko has also like Oklahoma. Gone out and as a national recruiter, gone out and stockpiled at pretty much every spot on defense in terms of just better players. And so you saw that show up, and I think they're in a lot better shape now.
Yeah, and so we mentioned Ole Miss. If they get adequate, the Mississippi State thing was interesting to me because it felt like once they had the exodus of players who maybe didn't want to play for Mike Leach, they seem to get better as the season went on. So I wonder if that group with a bunch of guys that now all want to be there, want to play for this staff, does that get better? And I mean, that's rough because we saw Arkansas get better.
We did.
It's like, there's not going to be
Arkansas
an easy out.
Get way better in 20 than we ever thought they could, like in one yes. little short season, you know?
Yeah. I just, there's no easy out there. There's no gimme anymore. And that's going to make things interesting because, you know, let's say I will not be the one who predicts the end of the Alabama dynasty, but Alabama only has to slip a little for somebody else to jump up because of the level of talent that LSU has amassed, that Texas A&M has amassed, that Georgia on the other side of the league has amassed. And
Florida.
That's
the
part. Yeah. And we'll see with Florida. Florida's going to be an interesting one because their defense was not very good last year.
No.
I'm not necessarily sure they've upgraded much this year. They've done a little bit in the transfer portal, but their offense will be very different. You know, DeMarcus Bowman, if you don't know who that is, he was a running back from Lakeland, Florida, who went to Clemson, decided to transfer closer to home. That's a guy they're really excited about. And with Emory Jones,
probably the highest touted guy that went in the portal in the last year, I would say, right, Andy?
Yeah. Yeah.
Besides Eric Gilbert, I guess, maybe so. Yeah.
Yeah. Because he was one that Clemson expected to come play. Like, it wasn't one of those deals. And it wasn't one of those deals where he got there and he wasn't what they thought he was. He was. No. He just wanted to transfer.
They just had a lot of running backs. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, the Eric Gilbert thing, if he had committed to Florida, this is the guy who left LSU, the tight end. He'd committed to Florida. He's now said he's not committed to Florida, and he'll let us know whenever he picks a school. I had a feeling when he did not wind up at a place where he could play in spring practice that was probably a bad sign for whatever school he picked, and it turns out it was for the Gators. That's he's probably not going to be there. So, but I do think that offense is going to look a lot more like what the Dan Mullen offenses at Mississippi State look like, where they're a little more run heavy. They were very pass heavy because one, that's Florida's offensive line was better at blocking for the pass, but two, when you have Kyle Pitts and Kyle Trask and Trevon Grimes and Kadarius Toney and all those guys, just throw the ball. It works.
Right.
So,
yeah, no, I'm with you on the West too, because you think about just at the top there, you know, you've got, and probably we'll spend a ton of this year talking about Bryce Young and how phenomenal he is and mm-hmm. all that. I'm not expecting any fall off either from Bama, but it's worth bringing up. Okay. What is going to be the transition time here for Brian Harsin and Auburn? You know, is this going to be sort of a get this thing rolling quickly, or is it going to be a big adjustment in terms of what he's walking into here in a very different league than the Mountain West? You know, you've got maybe this is and you know, I think Haynes King's really, really talented and can step in for Kellen Mond there, but maybe this is a quick bounce back for LSU, Andy, just because everybody else is sort of dealing with some big picture changes here.
Yeah, and I think the fall off from 2019 was so precipitous that people are just going to forget about them.
Right.
And I don't think that's a good idea. There's just too much talent. As you know, you have to remember when teams recruit like that, that they can bounce back quickly. And mm-hmm. and Georgia can probably do the same thing. We'll see with JT Daniels at quarterback what they look like. But that was a team that didn't live up to expectations in 2020, but could reach them in 2021, because they're still one of the most talented teams in America. So
who's going to start the most games at quarterback for LSU this season? No idea.
Is it Max Johnson? Is it that's the crazy part is Miles Brennan is back, and the offense is working under Miles Brennan. He just got hurt.
Sure.
So. I think they've got options, and you know it'll be up to Jake Peets, the new OC, to figure out who he likes the best, who works the best in that offense. But you know, they've got a few good options there, and that's the part that would scare me if I'm Nick Saban, Jimbo Fisher, Ed Orgeron. As you look across that division, you're like, golly, because even when you play Mississippi State, they're not going to have the talent you do. But they're going to play a system that's going to mess with you. You know, when you play Arkansas, they may not be as talented as you, but they're going to be tough, and they're going to play their asses off for Sam Pittman. So it's – and then Ole Miss, I'm telling you, Ole Miss is going to be scary.
I mean, even with Elijah Moore and Kenny Bowen and guys they lose, like that's still going to be the team that people are really afraid to play, I would think, in 2021.
Yeah, I agree. And – I think it's one of those where we still don't know with a lot of these places what's going to come out of the transfer portal mm-hmm. and what the roster is going to look like, because we're going to see more movement post spring, and I think that's going to get kind of interesting. But Max, I'm excited. I'm pumped. We're months from football, and you got me pumped. I like this. This is the first like real substantive football discussion I've had since the season ended, and I feel like.
Yeah.
This is going to be a very exciting year.
We all needed to kind of reset a little bit, have a little. I mean, it's been nice to take a little time off here and raise my newborn and start letting these things percolate, because last season was such a grind. But it is fun to, like, spring ball's here already, man. That's how it goes. There's no stopping with this, and it's time to start spinning it forward, which is awesome.
We'll be right back after this message from one of our lovely sponsors. You got a newborn, and mm-hmm. you know, you've been waking up and up all hours of the night. So what we all had to do during those times is find yourself a TV show that you can binge, because sometimes you're going to get up and not be able to get back to sleep, or sometimes the baby's not going to want to get back to sleep right away. So you gotta have a way to entertain yourself. For you, that has been Billions. And so I watched all of the Billions episodes as they aired. So I'm about a year out from the last one I've seen. They had the season get stopped because of the pandemic, and they actually squeezed a mention of the pandemic into the last episode that aired. Mm-hmm. But you wanted to do a random ranking, and I wholeheartedly agreed, of Billions characters.
Yeah, I've binged this entire show in 3-4 weeks here. And by the way, your listeners, I would love if they'd send me a show that I should jump onto next. Sopranos has kind of been on the list for a long time as the one I still haven't got to.
Ooh, that's a good thought.
So that may be the move. But if anybody has any good, like, hey, here's an hour-long show that It's worth the putting a whole month into it, basically. Let me know.
And you've seen all the newer ones, like the Queen's Gambit and all those, right?
I haven't seen Queen's Gambit still.
Oh, you got to watch Queen's Gambit. You okay. will have a new... You never realized chess could be that exciting.
Yeah, that's one of those where I wasn't all that into the trailer, but then everybody says it's just the greatest thing on Netflix. So I need to get to that.
Oh, it's tremendous. But let's talk Billions. Let's move back to Showtime and talk Billions. Brian Koppelman, the creator, obviously the writer of Rounders, and this is a guy who kind of dove into the world of high finance and hedge funds, and it's one of those shows that they got a little red meat for everybody, but I had us do a top five, and I thought, as I'm doing it, I realized, wow, I am light on main characters on this one, because I just love the supporting cast so much. And I think that's a good sign, though. I think when you got a show where the people who only get, say, 2 or 3 minutes of screen time an episode really jump out and become beloved characters, I think you're doing a good job.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I'm sure we could go through, maybe we will at the end go through the honorable mention list, because it's a long one for this show. But there's the cast of people that are just my favorites. But then there's also, like, with this show, there's a couple characters that, like, anytime they show up, you're excited. And especially with Billions, anytime Chuck Senior is just ended up losing something, just being a total loser. Because he never wins.
So much,
and he's easy to hate. But every time he loses, which is every time, I enjoy it. And same with the guy who who comes close to making my top five, and he's not even a great character, but he's just my favorite, probably, is Spiros. Because every time he's on, it is everyone dunking on him. It seemed like the Mensa episode in this last season was really good.
when he wore the Spiros is on, special driving outfit for his new car.
But the idea to put him at Axe Capital and not the SEC was just brilliant. And just the way that those guys treat him, while horrible, is amazing. It's one of my favorite things in the whole show.
All right. So let's start at number five. What is your number five?
My number five... I'm going to go Taylor Mason. I think that, first of all, they're one of the most interesting characters on TV, period. I think that's one of those, you watch the show and you're just like, nobody else could play this character like Asia Kate Dillon does. Like, it's just, I think the killer instinct, the ultra analytical personality. I enjoy that. I think they give them some of the best writing on the show.
I think Taylor is one of the most important characters. I actually have Taylor higher because I don't think the narrative arc of the last three seasons works without Taylor.
Correct.
Because the push pull of this is something that I am great at, that I was born for, but morally I have a huge issue with it, is kind of the push pull of the show. It's the whole push pull of the show. So,
well, and to start them off, to start them off with the poker episode is kind of the big introduction to them. I think it was just brilliant. It just makes all of us, because these are the guys that made Rounders, so we're all immediately suckers for this character and just what a badass they are. And so, in fact, I'm going to flip that. I'm going to put Taylor at four. I've been kind of debating four or five, but that's
So who's your new number
you're
five?
You're right. All right, so I'll put Wags at five.
Oh, I have Wags higher too.
Wags
is Axe's Bobby Axelrod. Bobby Axelrod is the main character played by Damian Lewis. He is the hedge fund manager who basically got the capital for his hedge fund by shorting airline stocks on 9/11, and that's sort of the narrative seed of the show and where a lot of the initial conflict comes from, but. So I actually have Axe as number five.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I'm telling you, the main character, like, you will not see Chuck in my top five at all. I hate Chuck. No. I have huge problems with Chuck. Like, there is no way in real life Chuck marries Wendy or Wendy marries Chuck.
No.
Because Chuck
that
is
was
just,
never really explained, honestly.
Chuck is a schlub who's propelled by his daddy the whole way. Like, and obviously we know why. this is the way it is, because Paul Giamatti's an amazing actor, and attaching himself to this show is probably how it got made. But I'm sorry. There's just...
It's very satisfying when Jock and Connerty finally knock him out of office. And it's very, to me, it was very satisfying when Wendy divorced him. Honestly, I mean, that's just, he's one of the main characters, but it's just hard to, Giamatti's incredible in this show, but I can't imagine people watch all five seasons of this or four and a half seasons of this. And at the end of it say, I'm Team Chuck.
Yeah. I mean, that person,
maybe there are a lot of people that feel that way.
That's not a, because he's kind of a fail son. So how would he be a worthy adversary for Axe or a worthy partner for Wendy? That's my biggest issue there.
Well, and this is why I got to bump up Taylor too, because you're right. The entire season of Axe versus Taylor is some of the best stuff. I mean, it really is.
Great.
And if you, without introducing that character, where, you know, what are we doing for, you know, season 3, 4, 5 here? Basically, I just think.
That's why I just don't think. I don't think you have as good of a show without Taylor. I think you could get rid of Chuck and still have a really good show.
Who's worse for you, Chuck or Axe's ex-wife Lara?
Well, I think they shuttled off Malin Ackerman pretty quick.
They did.
Because I think they felt like that wasn't adding much to the equation. Mm-hmm. And making, you know, giving Axe sort of a romantic void, I think, helps. I think that gives him, and, you know, increases the tension between him and Wendy, which was obviously there in the first place. So
sure.
I had Axe number 5 just because the show obviously revolves around him. And I think Damian Lewis does a good job of being the center of that. And I want to give Damian Lewis some props just because I loved Life. If you have not seen the series Life, it was one of those casualties of the writer's strike back in the early 2000s. But the plot is, he was a police detective. He was accused of a crime he didn't commit and convicted of a crime he didn't commit. He gets it overturned. He wins a massive lawsuit and becomes independently wealthy as a result of the lawsuit. And all he wants as part of the other part of him winning the lawsuit is he wants his job back. So they give him his job back and he gets a new partner. It's a great show. And it only ran
what,
for
what
one
channel
season.
Was this on?
I don't even know channels. I mean, it was on ABC. I'm pretty sure it was ABC, but it was, if you have not seen Life, it was one season, it was a very good show. My number 4 is Dollar Bill. Dollar Bill has a secret family, gets outed for having a secret family. He's like, I don't care. They try to blackmail him for it. He's like, don't care. Tell my wife. Doesn't matter.
That's the moment that makes the character is, what do they bust him on, Andy? He's got two minivans.
Exactly.
Why would anyone have two minivans?
and the best part is he makes so much money. He could have two Maseratis or two Ferraris, but he has two minivans because he doesn't care about the money. He just cares about winning.
That moment and the way he just sends off a quick letter to his wives explaining what the deal is and telling them I'm Kaiser Soze. And then he maintains the marriages the rest of the series.
That's
incredible.
It doesn't affect
absolutely
him
incredible.
At all.
He has his ups and downs, his emotional ups and downs in the show. Dollar Bill's number 2 for me, because he's nice. he's just a legend. And I'm sure probably people feel that way about Wags. I'm sure a lot of people, Wags is number 1 for them. I think I kind of, Wags is a little bit weaker here in season 5 than he was early on. But Dollar Bill is just incredible. The chicken episode is ridiculous. He's one of the greats.
The Mafia boxing match.
That's so stupid. It's but just the whole deal of I am not uncertain is just fantastic with him.
It's great. So who was your number 3?
My number 3 is Wendy.
Okay. My number 2 is Wendy. And
okay.
This is part of why her character is so interesting. Mm-hmm. It just makes me mad that she was with Chuck. Like that's why, because she's an MD. She's incredibly successful. She has gotten herself, you know, hooked into this hedge fund where they basically rely on her for everything. She's one of the most important people in the building. Mm-hmm. So that's why I don't understand why she's hooked in with this dude who's being yanked along by daddy. But Maggie Siff does a great job with this character. And look, Maggie Siff is good at playing this kind of character where a very complicated, where she's a very smart, powerful woman in a complicated relationship. Because if you saw Sons of Anarchy, similar deal. Doctor married to the head of a biker gang. So,
we just rewatched Mad Men at the start of the pandemic, and she has a little brief kind of season in that.
But in the first season,
even in that small role, she's fantastic. No, she is truly the biggest badass of the whole show. She really is from start to finish, and is just this kind of character. I'm sure we'd all love to work for, right, and have. Sort of breaking you down and building you up all the time and stuff. She's fantastic. And, I think her arc is just perhaps the best arc on the whole show. I mean, they knocked it out of the park with casting Maggie Siff, and she just plays all of the stuff that Wendy brings to the table phenomenally.
Well, and I said Taylor was my number three, and is the biggest narrative driver at work, and Wendy is the biggest personal narrative driver. And like when Chuck reads her files and then uses that, I mean, what a betrayal.
Yeah. What a betrayal.
So, I mean, it's just
well, and then the old Overton window speech, you know, I mean, that's probably number one on the betrayal list there on the show. But, She's the best. She's the best. And I'm sure there's probably a lot of people that watch this show and say, forget Chuck and Axe. You know, she's the favorite character, and I wouldn't blame you.
So my number one is Wags.
Okay.
He's just, cause every stupid thing they get involved in is because of Wags. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Every stupid rich guy trope that they do, like the bird they eat where they have to put the thing over their head, Wags.
Yes.
So I love that he's always getting them into and out of these messes.
Yes. Yeah. And that's another one where you think that actor, the last thing I probably saw him in was, Gail Bedecker in Breaking Bad. Very different.
Gail was probably his most famous role. He was also in Lost David Costabile is his name. And, yep. That was my first exposure to him, I think, was Lost. And he was a good character there because it was one of those where you didn't ever really quite know where he's coming from. Now, you always know where Wags is coming from, but he's just having so much fun playing him.
No, they let him live the most insane life of anybody on the show, even in this most recent season.
He was the managing editor in season 5 of The Wire, too.
Oh, wow. You're right. Those newspaper episodes. We sure love that arc, don't we, Andy?
Ah, yes. Well, David Simon had to get his shots in at the end at his old industry.
They let him just do the most insane stuff. He's also does he lead the show in references, you think, or does Axe?
Absolutely. Now, I think the references I could actually do with fewer.
And I watched the show with subtitles for that reason, man. Like, there's just so many things they're dropping every minute.
I'm a person who likes references, but I feel like they explain too many of their references. That's what bothers me. It's not the references themselves. It's the explanation.
When you go so obscure that then you have to explain it to the audience.
Yeah, like when you have to squeeze, three lines of dialogue into Taylor's mouth to explain what somebody else just said, like, it kind of kills the momentum. So I that would be my only critique is explain your references less. Everybody's got their phone. They can Google it as you go.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to pause though and try and look these up. I just didn't even really do it over the course of binging the show, but you could. I think there's probably websites devoted to a glossary of everything they've said on this.
Exactly.
But,
a billion references.
No, they give
who's
him
your number one, by the way.
My number one was Axe.
Okay.
And that's, all right. You know, I just think over the course of the show, and a lot of shows put you through this, right? Like you watch Breaking Bad and you get hooked into pulling for Walt no matter what, right? That's kind of how I am with Axe at this point, where, and maybe that's because Chuck is the adversary.
I turn against Walt after I am the man who knocks, or I am the one
who
knocks.
So. Yeah, of course. You're supposed to be challenged in that fandom over the course of the show. Yes, of course.
Yeah.
But
never turned on Jesse, though.
Nor should you. But maybe because Chuck is the adversary, it makes it so much easier to go team Axe throughout the show. But I just think Damon Lewis is phenomenal. I think the character, obviously super flawed character, but just the killer instinct and the way the showdowns he has over the course of the show, the way that he always has a fix to get out of trouble, always has some lever he can pull to escape. Like that's going to continue to be the whole point of the show, is someday they will catch him. But for now, you don't want to see it happen, because he's just he's fantastic, it's hard not to be on the side of Axe Capital, I think, when you watch the show.
And it's educational. I mean, when the GameStop thing happened, I already knew what a short squeeze was, because I'd seen it on Billions.
Because you saw it it ruined his who did you go see? Metallica?
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. No, that's like episode 4 or whatever of the whole show. They explain short squeeze. So it is educational. Not to say I have, some portfolio now after watching the show or anything, but.
No, I don't think that's a good idea to use it as investment advice. But
no.
I am going to go drink some ice juice after this show.
Where's Ira on the list for you? Because he's pretty close to the 5 for me. That poor guy.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Now, there's. I mean, he's as loyal as it gets. So, and then the lawyer / black bag
Orrin
guy,
Bach.
I mean, he's just evil. He's unbelievable.
Orrin Bach and Hall, you kind of have to combine them, but that duo is pretty diabolical.
Well, and like Hall is kind of just sort of morally blank.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the best way to describe it. It's not I guess he's probably a sociopath, like,
right.
Has no empathy for anyone and just was like, well, I'll do this now.
It makes you an effective fixer, though, when you've got anything.
If you want to do this, that's kind of how he presents everything. Well, if you'd like to, mm-hmm. We can. I know a guy.
It's a great resource to have when you're Bobby Axelrod. I think the other folks that were kind of in honorable mention for me in terms of making if I'm filling out a top 10, I think Spiros, like I said, Orrin Bach, Sacker, Mafii, and Ira would be like some of the people who would be close to the list for me.
They could do more.
And
with
Bruno
Sacker,
the pizza guy, obviously.
Because Sacker feels like a better foil for Axe.
Yeah. She's and probably underused over the course of the series.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Connerty is just, I do like the fact that they made him go crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to kind of walk this line, but I just that the character doesn't do that much for me.
I agree, and he broke bad so hard in season 4 that it's easy to drop him down my list.
Yeah,
and
that's why I
not
just,
that
I
it's all
like
about
Sacker,
morals or anything, but
yeah, but Sacker is the one who is she's pliable enough to understand. Hey, I got to play the angles here. I can't just be rigid
mm-hmm.
and be one way. I've got to be like them a little bit if I want to get them.
Oh yeah, definitely one of the best chess players of the whole show. I also got to shout out Dr. Gus. He only gets a couple episodes, but absolutely ridiculous. And what else? What else comes to mind for you here? Malkovich's appearance in the series is certainly strange, but enjoyable.
Well, and there's always somebody, I like the pop-ins. I think now it's become a thing to be on the
celebrity
show.
Ones. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Mark Cuban was really proud to be, I guarantee you.
Yes.
He loved being on that show. But
they're getting as many Shark Tank people on there as they can. That's for sure.
No doubt. And so the Corey Stoll character in this most recent season, I think, could be a really good one. I like that.
You're off to a good start.
No matter what Axe does, he can't one up him.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy's got this squeaky clean, pristine image. There's something dark behind it, but you can't really quite get at it yet. And Corey Stoll was so good in House of Cards before yes. House of Cards completely went off the rails. But his character in that show was fantastic. So I do think I'm very excited to see where they take that when that comes back on.
I agree. It's pretty tantalizing just the way it cut off here to do a 7-episode half season and then, you know, be shut down. Also thought like Rebecca Cantu was good. I enjoyed her, that character, over the course of season yep. 4. As another good foil for Axe
because
yeah.
Chuck isn't.
No, I agree. And where do you land on Judge DiGiulio?
I like him. I like the fact that he's got a nice compromise judge.
Yeah, he's good. And I have to mention Hard Bob is also on my list as a guy. Only pops up a couple Bob. Times, but Hard Bob's phenomenal.
Dude, like he brooks Bob
no bullshit.
I had forgotten about Hard. It's been so long since I've seen Hard Bob. Hard Bob's like a season 2 guy. That's the and that Hard Bob's the one where they're
he pops up like once a season to get something done. He's fantastic.
Well, yeah, and Clancy Brown was the senator mm-hmm. they're trying to deal with. Or no, he was the
Jock Jeffco.
Secretary
yeah,
of the Treasury.
He was
yeah.
Right. Krakow was the Treasury guy. Jock was over, I don't remember what the title was,
right.
but appointed by
right.
the president.
The Secretary of the Treasury is the one who's always in on the schemes.
Yeah.
But Jeffcoat was doing his own thing, and he's the
AG
one.
AG or something like that. Yeah.
He was AG, that's right. And they changed the rail lines to run the poop yes. cars by his ranch.
Yes. The poop train parked out back is one of the best chess moves of the whole series.
Well, and Clancy Brown, you know, if you didn't watch Carnival on HBO, he was fantastic in that. But we all know Clancy Brown's greatest role. And Max, in about 6 years, you will hear so much Clancy Brown, you won't be able to stand it. Mr. Krabs on SpongeBob SquarePants.
Really?
Eugene Krabs, big fan of money.
Oh, my God.
Clancy Brown.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that. I wonder if he still doing that a little bit? That's amazing.
They're doing spinoff type stuff. The show itself is shut down, but
Andy, I hate to tell you this, but I am young enough that like me and my younger brothers did watch a little bit of SpongeBob back in the day. So we will, but my son will definitely be way into that.
Oh, you're going to watch a lot more. I promise you that.
Yeah.
Max Olson, it has been a pleasure. Get back to raising that kid right on Stop Rate and SpongeBob. And for the rest of
you, he watched a lot of Billions with me. I hopefully he didn't store any of that. I don't think he did. But he watched
Daddy,
a lot
what's
with
a
me.
Short squeeze? Daddy, what are derivatives?
Thank you for having me. This was a nice break from my life of diaper changing and feedings.
My pleasure. We've all been through it. We'll talk to you guys on Friday.